Days and weeks leading up to the fall election, many polls had Joe Biden with a comfortable lead over President Trump. A Washington Post poll had Biden with a 17-point lead in Wisconsin. That one was widely seen as an outlier. But the final Marquette University Law School poll had Biden with about a 5-point edge. He wound up winning by less than 1 point. CNN had Biden up by 12 points nationally. He won by about 3. All this came after pollsters undercounted Trump's support, apparently in 2016 as well. Republican pollster Frank Luntz was on Fox News over the weekend. He says it's time for the polling industry to face the music.
This should be a loss of credibility. If you can't get it right, if you can't make an accurate prognosis, you shouldn't be hired. So I think what's happening right now is actually awesome. It's accountability in action. And if you got it wrong this time, you got it wrong twice in a row, you should be working in the business. There's other things you can do. You can sell real estate. You can sell stocks. Stop selling polls.
Our next guest says polls are, quote, on the emergency room table. You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the polls getting it wrong? Do you tend to trust polling, or have you always taken it with a grain of salt? Has your opinion of polling changed over the last few years? Do you answer the phones when a poll calls? Do you even know it's a poll? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School poll. Charles, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Well, can you talk, Charles, about changes that you and other pollsters made between 2016 and 2020 to try to fine-tune the polling?
Sure. And some of those work to some extent, but as you were just saying, the average error is pretty large. I'll give you an example. In our 2016 poll, we were on Clinton's vote within a decimal point of her actual vote, but we understated Trump's margin by about 8 percentage points. So that was a huge error for us and also led us to have Clinton ahead when obviously Trump won. This year, with the changes that we made, we were off by 3 points on a high voter turnout model and by 4 points on our usual turnout model. But this time we had Biden at 50 and he got 49.6. So again, very close to Biden's vote. But on Trump's vote, even with our changes, we had him at 45 and he's getting 48.9. So again, this time we're 3.9 points off. So about half the error that we had last time, but still an understatement of Trump's vote. Now, this time we did correctly have Biden leading, and we consistently through the fall had Biden ahead by either 4 or 5 points and characterized that as a modest but steady lead. We also saw a group of polls in the state that had Biden up by 8, 9, 10, 11 points. And I think, first of all, that raise the average poll in the state and means that the average poll is off by 8 or 9 points. So there's some variation in how big the error is. But I think those larger leads tended to dominate the impressions that were formed about the campaign. And that's not just true here. It was true in many states, at least on a preliminary basis. And granted, the full votes are not tallied yet. But it looks like something just a little under a 6-point exaggeration of Biden's lead is the average error in state polling around the country. And that's higher than it was last time and is certainly a reason to be concerned about what was it that led to this consistent overestimate of Biden's advantage.
Now, I want to talk about margin of error with you a little bit. I believe the margins of error in your last poll was in the neighborhood of 4%. And correct me if I'm wrong. That means that you say Biden's getting 50, I'm just going to round it to 50.
Yeah, that's
he could range from 46 to 54. And Trump, that's if he's exactly getting 45, right, could range from, 41 to 49. So within that, there was an opportunity for a Trump victory still consistent with the polling. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. And our actual margin of error was 4.4, but I agree. Let's keep it simple so you and I both can do this in our heads. But that's exactly right. And so a 4 or 5 point lead with a 4 point margin of error means it's probable that the leading candidate's ahead, but it's not a guarantee. And I think, you know, we report the margin of error with every poll. Reporters, the news, public radio report that margin of error. But it's hard for us to find a way to convey that uncertainty. And I think it's so much easier to simply say Biden's ahead by five than it is to say Biden's ahead by five with a plus or minus 4 point margin of error. That's complicated to get across. And, you know, you state it once in the press release or in the coverage, but it's tiresome to repeat it every single time.
Talking to Charles Franklin from the Marquette University Law School poll, talking about polling and the 2020 election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Okay, all that said, you were saying there's a pretty general trend in 2016, maybe a little less so, but still there in 2020, of undercounting Trump voters in the polls. What are some of the ideas of why that ended up that way?
Yeah, I think that there's now, with this additional election, pretty strong evidence that there's a modest group. I don't want to exaggerate the size of this, right? We were off on Trump's vote by 3.9%. So let's say there's maybe 4% of the public that supports President Trump, but declines to participate in polling altogether. This is different from the shy Trump notion that people are just unwilling to say, but rather simply withdrawing from participation in the public conversation that polling is trying to provide. I and my fellow pollsters have looked for those people and not found them, but I think, again, we see the evidence that they're missing, and they're missing from our surveys.
I've seen an argument, Charles, that a lot of people these days just don't answer the phone from a phone number they don't recognize. And you try to account for that, of course, in polling. But the numbers are so big that if, say, a Democratic voter is more willing to pick up that phone than a Republican voter for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason would be. But right. If that is skewed in any way, that could be skewing the polls. What do you think?
That's right. Certainly, lots of people don't pick up the call. But it has always been that Democrats and Republicans alike despise scam and telemarketing calls. And so there hasn't been a partisan balance bias in this. Also, if you look at our data over the last 4 years, we have consistently had about a 45% Republican, 45% Democratic split. And that has not trended or changed over the last few years, meaning we are not losing Republican respondents, say, or gaining Democratic respondents. That's been very flat. But that doesn't fully account for the idea that there might be this 3 or 4 or 5% that we are missing entirely, who are not necessarily Republicans, but are supporters of President Trump and turn out for him in elections, but don't do the polls. One reason that's an attractive idea is that in 2018, with President Trump not on the ballot, we were within 1.1 points of the governor's race and a tenth of a point in the Senate race. And this spring, in the presidential primary for the Democrats, we were within 2 of Biden and of Sanders. What's the difference between those 3 elections that were very accurately estimated and this one, when we're off by 3 or 4, let alone 2016, when we were off by 8, a really bad performance? You know, one obvious thing is it's the president's presence on the ballot and this idea that he brings a set of voters in who are very skeptical of polls, of media, very supportive of him, but may not be regular voters in midterm elections.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Wausau. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Well, my point, he actually just kind of brought up one of my points in that you know, a lot of people might not normally vote that are now going out because of, like, how polarizing this issue is. And I think just the level of importance people, everyday people, are putting on polls and how they expect it to be so accurate is, in one, and it's a mistake, and in two, it can actually help rev up even more support for the losing party.
Oh, interesting, Jeremy. A couple of interesting points there, Charles. One, I guess, what should everyday people do when they see a poll? And two, do polls, you know, I guess it's an uncertainty principle. Does observing these things in polls change voter behavior?
Right. I think one thing that we're certainly going to look for, and Jeremy's right on it, is there a turnout difference that we can find? Let's look. And we won't be able to do this until after the results are certified and we're sure about the counts everywhere. But is there a chance that turnout either exceeded expectations or perhaps fell short of expectations in various parts of the state? I think that, aside from the story of Trump supporters who are reluctant to do the polls, is another possibility, and that would be a surge in Election Day turnout in the strongest areas of the state for President Trump. As for, you know, the way that polls are presented and the way people perceive them, and I think polling averages and forecasting models are part of this, tends to focus on that margin. Somebody's up by five or somebody's up by eight or whatever that is. And again, we're not conveying the sort of uncertainty about that. And, you know, finally, after two substantial errors in a row, maybe that will indeed lead people to be a lot more skeptical about the numbers they see, and paradoxically, thus actually appreciate the margin of error a little bit better.
Right now, we're looking at the polls, what they got wrong in the presidential race in 2020 and the future of the polling industry. Charles Franklin's with us, professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School poll. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Platteville. Jim, hi.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are beginning to believe that some pollsters may have an agenda, especially when they're off double digits, that their agenda is to try and discourage the voters of a candidate they're not in favor of. And we don't really know who won yet. We have these Dominion voting machines that were off by 6,000 votes or more in one county, and there's 46 other counties in the same state using the same system.
I'll cut in there, Jim. There's a lot of fact checks on that particular claim. But to Jim's main point, Charles, Jim's skeptical that pollsters may have an agenda or a bias.
Yeah, I think that that is a common perception, especially President Trump has emphasized that in talking about fake polls. And this is part of the complication of where we are, is that every president has always criticized polls that they don't like. But in the last few years, this has become a strongly partisan perception and one that the president has emphasized. And then when the polls are also off and off in favor of the Democrat, I think that reinforces that perception. So I don't think that I don't believe that professional pollsters, especially those that are not working for a campaign, I don't think that they have any real incentive to be wrong. You had the bit from Frank Lutz at the top of the show saying, if you can't get this right, you should get out of the business. I think that we diminish our credibility every time we're wrong, and that's a big deal. So the idea that we would purposely be wrong, I think, is stretching it a bit. But the reasons why we were as wrong as we were and why some were a lot wrong and some a bit wrong, those are things that we really have to work on. And, you know, we've worked on them for 4 years and we've still not solved the problem. That's a big deal.
Thanks for that call. I'm looking at an article here. This is in The Atlantic, Charles, about how Gallup polls are trying to figure out how they got the incumbent president so wrong, underestimated his chances of winning. The year is 2012, and the president was Barack Obama. The polling error doesn't always go one partisan way or the other, does it? Obama, I think the general consensus was, outperformed some of the big polls at the time.
No, that's right. And it is an important point that over, let's say, the last 20 years since 2000, we see polling errors go in a pro-Democratic direction, sometimes a pro-Republican direction the next. And when you look at individual pollsters, they're not consistent from year to year in terms of whether they're too high or too low. In one sense, that's what we would expect from random sampling. We would expect variation. On the other hand, the biases now have been modest in most cases in 2016, but big in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in 2016. This year, they look pretty big, but not always gigantic in 2020. For example, in Georgia, it looks like the average error is about one percentage point, so very small error in some places. But as I said earlier, averaging about 6% this time and persistently in a Democratic direction.
Time for another caller now. David is with us in Oconomowoc. David, hi.
Hi there. I was just wondering, how accurate are the exit polls?
Interesting question, David. And we heard from Sue on Facebook, who says, after the election, how do they know I'm a white woman, let alone who I voted for? Charles, we're seeing all these post-election analyses saying what demographic groups broke for which. Are exit polls any better than other polls, especially given that so many people didn't walk up to a poll to vote?
Right. I think exit polls are complicated, and there's a lot of, within the profession, understanding of the fallibility of exit polls. I think this is a big problem that exit polls, for a long time, this is not this year, but going back to at least 2004, if not before that, we reify the idea that exit polls are super accurate when in fact they're not super accurate. And that's a real problem, to treat them as an infallible arbiter. What they're useful for and have historically been used for is to understand how different groups voted, who voted for whom, and why they did that. But they're not useful for forecasting the outcome of an election. And that's true of this year as much as any year.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Kelsey with us now in Janesville. Kelsey, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if we could theoretically, hypothetically discuss what a United States would look like without polls. Certainly wouldn't want to suppress any freedoms of the press, but how would that change, you know, how candidates interacted with us and their campaign strategies? And without any, you know, personal offense to your guests, would our country be better off without so much dependence on polls?
Very politely asked, Kelsey. Great, Charles, what do you think?
Great question, and seriously, I'm absolutely not offended by it. Thank you for posing it. Here's my take on this. If we didn't have public polling, then it would only be the campaigns and the parties and the interest groups that do the polling, and there wouldn't be an independent look at polling, whether from the media or from universities. Now, you know, if hypothetically you could ban polling altogether, would it be, in fact, better to run elections without knowing what the public thinks, or better to be informed by what the public thinks? So obviously I'm a homer here. I like polls, and I think their purpose of informing the public is like the purpose of a free press in trying to provide independent information. But, you know, we are fallible, and there are problems with that. But I do think, if you're going to have polling at all, it shouldn't be limited only to the interest groups and the parties and the candidates who have a very strong self-interest in those results, but should be something that also contains a public sphere of polling.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute or so, Charles, I saw some outfit in California said, hey, we got better results when we asked not just who are you going to vote for, but who do you think people around you are going to vote for? You know, maybe it was coincidence that that one worked out better. What do you think about asking questions in a different way to tease out who people are going to vote for?
I'm fine with trying out different questions. I must say I followed that one. It seems very ad hoc to me and was a good way for that particular poll, which had Biden up by 10 or 11, to then have it the other way as well by saying, but there were other questions that showed a close race. So, no, count me unimpressed with that. But strongly encouraging the idea that we tried different methodologies, including online polling, including text message-based polling, including phone polls like we do. All of those things are active areas of research. And if we can find ways to do better, we're all better off as a polling industry, as well as a consuming public, to get the best possible methods. So there's a lot of experimentation going on in alternative ways, but I'm unimpressed with that particular question.
Charles, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin's a professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette University Law School poll. We talked to him about the future of political polling after many polls, again, were off on the presidential race.